What do I mean by dark arts? Myself as a player, if I got contact in box, I'm going down. It's not diving. It was a foul on Will. He tried to stay up because he was honest. So sometimes you get punished for being a nice guy.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Welcome along. It is the Hurling Pod on the back of the penultimate weekend of the regular section of the league. And realistically, after what's happened this weekend, we know what Division 1A and 1B is going to look like for next year. But we've still got plenty to play for going into the last week. If Galway, who now have home advantage against Limerick, were to win, and Tipperary is expected to get a big win against Antrim, Limerick, who are unbeaten, 100% start, could potentially go out in scoring difference and miss out in the semi-final next Saturday afternoon. In Division 1A, we know that Wexford are going to be in that division next year after they beat Waterford. Lots of your questions are about Davy Fitzgerald. I'm sure Skell will have no opinion whatsoever about how Davy and Waterford have been going so far this season. We can also talk about the top of the table clash where, again, this always seems like a bit of a misnomer. Kilkenny now haven't won in Ennis in 11 years. And then you think, how often do they actually play each other there? But the good run for Clare in the league has continued against Kilkenny. Kilkenny man Paul Murphy will no doubt point to the fact that Kilkenny have won the last two times they met in the championship in All-Ireland semi-finals. So all that to chat about, including Westmeath's first win of the campaign, where they got a victory against Antrim in Division 1B at the weekend as well. And it's very clear how things look at the top of 2A. So Carlow are going to be going through to the final. Laois have got a home semi-final. And then it's kind of a mix of any of the rest could qualify in the other spot for the second semi-final. So it is an interesting hurling pod ahead. We'll talk about all those games, but there's only one place to start, and that is this man, Johnny Glynn, back in Galway hurling training. Glynn, an All-Ireland winner with his county in 2017, last played for the Maroon in 2019 in the Leinster Senior Hurling Round Robin. James Scali, you were on the same team as him then. You've been manifesting that this was going to happen, that Johnny Glynn was going to make a great return.
Damn you, I was waiting for that word to use it. I manifested this situation, you took it off me. I was like, yes, what word can I use that won't get caught in me? Manifestation. If you just say it enough, lads, it'll happen. Johnny Glynn's going to win Leinster. Johnny Glynn's going to win Leinster. I'm going to keep saying that this year.
You could have said Johnny Glynn's going to win an All-Ireland medal, but you picked Ulster, so you're after scoping yourself there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Can we get you part of final win an All-Star?
No, not today's game. Jesus, no. He's back, lads. He's back. How are we feeling? We must be excited, surely.
Well, Henry said he's not back. Henry said he's actually not on the panel. Like, so
I've learned anyway, don't believe them Kilkenny lads. Don't believe them lads. Whatever the lads say, don't believe
except
them.
Except from their Galway manager, is that it?
The big man is back, lads. Just long to Johnny. Don't mind the sharp ball tactic, just long to Johnny. And everyone else just feed off him.
Right, give us a scoop. Give us a scoop on this, girl, because I gave you the scoop initially when a member of a management team, who I will continue to keep my source anonymous on this, had told me a few weeks back that he was heading home from New York. He was going to go back in, train with the Galway panel, and we would see what happened after that. Now, based on what Henry said after the game today, it would seem that he's going to go back for New York for a while and come back to Galway. How realistic is it that we actually see Johnny Glynn touch a ball this summer for Galway?
I think it has to be realistic, because if you go back a few months ago, like, he featured for Ardrahan in their club championship, you know, and like, and featured prominently, in fairness, on their run into the quarterfinal. But like, I think there needs to be, how to put this now, like, kind of nearly a mutual decision between the two of them. Either you're in or you're not. So kind of, there can be no real, you know, bit part come day go day, because Intercounty is a far different club, as we know. But truthfully, before we go any further, I genuinely didn't know he was coming back. There was no rumours around the county he was coming back. The rumours weren't exactly rumours. They were more, you know, wishes, if you like. So I'm delighted to see him back. But where does he play then is another question. Because the way the game, like, his last game, as you noted, was 2019. And in that four or five seasons, the game has evolved and changed dramatically from what it was then. So it's a much shorter game now, a much faster game, I have to say, with our close context. So maybe we'll have to put him on the edge of the square and just get everyone lumped the ball into him. And that's as much damage as he might cause. It could be perfect. But very interesting to see how he goes, because he's been playing football predominantly, as you know, at a county level, and featuring well there. So there's no question over his fitness, physique, you know, injuries, all that. That'll be all fine. I know Johnny well. He still has the bite, that's for sure. So he won't be caught lacking there. It's just the hurling speed. How fast can he get it back up to said speed, and see, can he be a big influence for Galway while we win that Ireland tomorrow? All right, during that process.
Too late.
Realistically, Murph, how difficult is it? Nearly 5 years now at this stage, going back to the summer of 2019, last game was against Dublin in the round robin, to have been away from intercounty hurling for that long. Scal says he's been playing football the last few years for New York. He's a guy who's in really good shape. He bumped into him in Croke Park last year. He looked like he was ready to walk onto an intercounty pitch. But how much will have been lost in the 5 years away from playing intercounty hurling?
Yeah, there'll definitely be a sharpness lost. Like, if he came back from the start of this year, let's say, and was involved with Galway, I'd say something. That's again, is something where he's exposed himself to, at the earliest opportunity, to league hurling, get a nice bit of league hurling in, and then go into a round robin. But like, from Henry's comments after the game, I think he was speaking to Darren Frehill after the game, he said that he's back for a week, he's going to go back to New York, and they're hoping to get him back for a week again and take it from there. Like, the closer it gets to championship, I think it's tough for Johnny Glynn to start. Scales right there, like, you know, the game has moved on, and I think something you often hear with lads who, let's say, they go off to Australia for a few years, and granted, right, those boys might be living the best life when they're out there in terms of fitness, but they come back and suddenly the game has moved on, even at club level, and they're completely amazed. Like, intercounty again, it's every year it's evolving, it's really moving on. I've absolutely no doubt Johnny Glynn's the fitness, he has the skill, but adapting to where the game is at the moment, making the moves, you know, realizing that when he would have left, physicality obviously was a huge part of it. It still is, but the ball passing through the hand, you know, the running game and all these things are, you know, to the fore at the moment, really. So it's just adapting to that. Like, nobody would ever doubt that Johnny Glynn has the skills, you know, has everything he needs to you know, achieve at this level, as he's proven before. But it's just a matter of, look, he's been out of the game for 5 years. He definitely is going to need time to get back into it. And to be honest, I would kind of see it as a role that if he is part of the panel going forward for the summer with Henry Shefflin, it would be a case of, obviously, he brings great experience to the dressing room, but I would see him probably being more coming off the bench after 40 minutes, maybe, or maybe starting and going, listen, get in there, you know, hit them hard straight away, put a bit of confusion into the defence. But, you know, he might last 45 minutes or something going really hard. It's hard to know. It's hard to know. But I think the earlier Galway get him back, the better. You know, the quicker you get him back there, you get him out in the field, and start exposing him to where the game is at the moment, the better for Galway and the more they'll get out of him over the summer.
Yeah, because it sounds to me, Scott, like, I don't know what his work situation is in New York, but it has to be fairly unworkable, the idea of, say, coming back for a little window, then going back to New York, coming back for a window. If he's going to be playing intercounty hurling for Galway this summer, and bearing in mind the championship will come around in 4 or 5 weeks' time, yeah, he probably has to commit to being home for quite a block. Like, he'd have to be home for at least 2 months for this to actually work.
Absolutely. And the thing is that I know there was an opportunity going back a few years back when he last played that he was able to work remotely. But I think he's actually, you know, elevated through his career. He's progressed in his career to take on more responsibility in his respective role at work. So maybe that opportunity is not there, that he has to be more, you know, on-site based. But for me, I'm looking at him thinking, like, he's the type of guy that's always been physically in pristine condition. He's always had, you know, the high ball capability. But no more than myself, he just needs hours on the ball wall or hours on the pitch to get the touch up, you know. And like, with the way the game is, the speed has just, it's gone to a different level. So I'm wondering, can he get the hours in, you know? But then I started breaking down, and I was saying to myself, Murphy, if we were in a summer, and I said, right, could you get sharp at hurling in 6 weeks? You get fairly sharp, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you would, yeah.
And I broke it down and said, if you train 3 times a week on a pitch, and minus warm-ups, that's 3 hours a week, you could say, solid. That's only 18 hours of work that gets you up to a good level. So there's plenty of hours a day. Can he get up to a certain level, you know, where he becomes an asset, you know? And I don't think he'd start, actually. I think he'd come in at the latter stage. You know, if you're a tired fullback or a tired wingback and you see this behemoth coming on top of you, it's not ideal. It's not ideal to have him coming after you. And especially in the way the games are nowadays, like, you know, you could have a situation where you're potentially chasing again, you know, and that, what better man to bring in for a long ball tactic than Johnny Glynn? So the question for me is, can he get the time? In Ireland is one. Can you get the time on the pitch and having the hurl in the hand is two. And let's say, what do you do with him then when he gets to a certain level is three. But thankfully, they're not questions for me to answer. I don't get paid for that.
They're not. I was going to put to you, Scal, how often do Galway actually look to play with a bear in the square type? I would have thought that Galway, with the way their forwards are set at the moment, you'd probably want two corner forwards who want to get as much space as they possibly can. You'll withdraw some of your players back. Like, it's not like Galway aren't stacked in the forward line right now, because you are.
Well, they are stacked. Like, if you remember, cast your mind back to last year, like, we were commenting on how Conor Whelan was always having to contest the ball coming into him. Maybe the quality ball wasn't hectic. We weren't utilising his runs as much, and he wasn't getting the ball in free space. And when you have a forward of his capability, you want him to have the ball uncontested, nearly have a 70-30 advantage. So if they're still going to play in that way, you know, Johnny Glynn's an ideal man to have in there. And what about having Conor Whelan work off him? So if you have the option to go into a corner to Conor Whelan or long to Johnny at 14, you just don't know what you might create. Because the guy, if his size, let's say, I know you use the word a bit, but you do create a small bit of pandemonium when you have someone like him, because his aerial ability is unreal. And you only get a true feeling of it. Murph, you know, he's like, I commented this before, like his wingspan and arm reach is so vast, right? That even if you had a fullback, like, let me see, Mike Casey, even him, when he's hurled up fully in the air, Johnny could still nearly reach above him. Do you know what I mean? He's that large. So I just think the opportunity would be, the amount of opportunities that you create would be more with Johnny if he's partnered by someone like a Conor Whelan. And I think that's probably where you put him, because it's hard for me to see him in like a, you know, a Hegarty role, whereas you see the deep lying wing forward, or, you know, because Galway's game at the moment seems to be with Joseph Cooney, Tom Monaghan, Gavin Lee, kind of moving around the middle third and shooting from distance. And that's not really Johnny's go-to. So I'd say if we're going to see him anywhere, we'll see him as the bear in the square. It's interesting.
Okay. Let's hold on, see where this goes. It's an intriguing story. The only thing is, before we move off this, Kel, are you officially willing to remove him from your one per county at this point, and we accept he's not playing for New York?
Jesus. It's like when I play hide and seek with my daughter, right? She hides in behind the curtain, okay? And I can see her legs, but she thinks I can't see her. So I'm not. So like that's, I'm playing that game. Well, I'm just doing this. I'm not answering the question. We're moving on, all right? Next question. You can't see me. He's still on my team. Next.
Do we let him away with it, Murph, until he actually walks out onto the pitch with Galway? Is that the point when it goes beyond return?
Well, not by the way Skell was talking at the start of this. Like Skell just said, like I even said, Henry said that he's back for a week's training. He's not on the panel. Skell was talking in present tense there. He was saying, Johnny is back. Wasn't expecting it a whole lot. The only time he actually went back on that was at the end where you were like, oh, shite, I have to take him out of the team. So, no, I think by the way you were talking there, Skell, now that's it done. It's out. Either your team is out or you may take Johnny Glynn out.
Do you know what? We'll go at 14. We'll still take you on.
I'm willing to give you time. Maybe by the time the members pod rocks around, you can find another player from another county that you want to put in his position.
Another Galway lad sent off from the weekend anyway. So we'll just include him.
Shots fired. Shots fired. Oh, that's fine. Oh. Okay. Oh. That's all right, Murph.
I feel warm after that, but now it's coming, isn't it?
Galway are fine playing with 12, so we'll be fine. Maybe Skell can put 12 in his team. This is the Hurling Pod, by the way, which is brought to you by Bord Gáis Energy. They are the proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship. The weekend has just gone by. It has possibly taken away some of the drama ahead of the last weekend, but as I mentioned in the intro, particularly when it comes to Division 1B, it's going to go right down to the final minute of those matches this coming Saturday, because despite the fact that it's a double header now in Galway, we'll know what Tipperary will have to do at full time, because they will know what's happened with the result between ostensibly Limerick's home game, but the game that's happening in Salt Hill. If Galway win, they could snipe in on the last day, and it would come down to scoring difference with the three counties if all three are on, what would it be, 6 points at the end of it. So, oh, sorry, 8 points, because they would have all won four, yeah. So that's all kind of in the balance. And Clare, especially now, going to play against a scratch Offaly team, because the Offaly manager, Johnny Kelly, said after the game today, he's using his panel for the last game. It's a dead rubber for them. Clare have already put themselves into a semi-final, so they'll be looking to just secure a top spot. And then we'll see what happens with the teams who are below them to see who's going to take the second semi-final spot. But when we break it down for this weekend, I think probably the live match, lads, on the telly on Saturday is the way to start, which again continues this crazy record that Limerick have in winning second halves against Tipperary. So Tipperary are still waiting for a win against Limerick, which hasn't happened in 6 years now at this point. But it was Colm Key's stat which again stood out, which I'm sure you guys saw over the weekend. I'm going to quote him absolutely directly so that I don't get this one wrong. But Limerick have dominated these second halves against Tipperary, and that trend has continued, which is probably the fairest way of putting it, in the weekend just gone by. And they just can't buy one. So better look to the scoreboard for Tip, directly quoting from Colm here, at the end. But they're now 13 games where they haven't won a second half against John Kiely's Limerick. Before halftime, Limerick are 26 points down across those games. And after halftime, it's Limerick plus 74. That's a trend, Murph, that you just can't ignore.
Yeah, and I suppose it's it's exacerbated by the fact that Tip have been in good positions, I suppose, against Limerick down through the years, particularly the Munster final in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. I think that's kind of where this stat really came out of initially. I remember seeing this maybe 2 years ago, and it came up. But, you know, Tip, in fairness to him, there's two ways to look at it. One, Tip have gone at Limerick really well in first halves, but why... Now, do you know what? I will temper with saying that what team have really done well against Limerick in the second half? Bar Clare, let's say, Munster finals, Clare beating them down in the Gaelic grounds. Clare are the only team that have really done well, from what I can think of, against Limerick in second halves. Granted, I know what Galway bet them early last year, was it, in the Gaelic grounds? But we've kind of picked Tipperary out as this team. Now, look, that record it speaks for itself. Tipperary have been in positions to go and maybe beat this Limerick team. Do I put that down to Tipperary not executing it or Limerick being that good? I put it down to Limerick, to be honest. I don't put it down to necessarily Tip completely crumbling. It's just that this Limerick team know how to go up through the gears. Like, I was watching the game at the weekend, and one thing that struck me was I was looking out for different things, the way the game was panning out, and I kind of stopped watching the scoreboard. And when I looked back up, Limerick had gone out into a 2 or 3 point lead, but it didn't feel that way. It didn't feel like that they were, you know, if you were to ask me to score, I'd say, oh, it's a draw, or maybe there's a point in it. But for all the really good hurling Tipperary were doing, I think it was a reflection that Limerick, at their ease, were getting scores, whereas, you know, Tipperary were really having to work, and they did really well. They did a lot of good stuff. But I just think it's Limerick's ability to be so efficient in what they're doing that they just start coasting, and they just get up through the gears. And before you know it, they've pushed out in front of you by 4 or 5 points. That's not taken away from the stat. It's an amazing stat. But I wouldn't be as hard on Tipperary in this stat as it is. I think it's really just a reflection of the capability of this Limerick team. Mm.
What about that second half, Skell? Can we call a spade a spade? This game is pretty shit.
No, Will, you're using my language.
That is a spade.
It was a poor game. I suppose across the television, it's very hard to get an understanding of the actual true, you know, difficulty of the conditions. You know, and I think what makes Limerick stand out in off-latch is their ability to use the conditions against the team. So you might look at last night and see the way that Limerick set up zonally. So that means then you can't tip having the ability really to play space, have play a man. So that means your execution has to become perfect in a wet day. And if you ask me why are Limerick so dominant in second halves, is because I think in first half teams come with bundles of energy, new plans, etc. But in second half, then Limerick just completely dominate the opposition's puck out. So if you can dominate the opposition puck out, that allows Limerick to A, shoot as much as they want, because they can turn them over in the puck out. But B, it stems a platform for the opposition, and then you're kind of refined to scraps and to half chances to try and get at Limerick. And the trouble is, let's say, if you look at last night's game, you know, Tipperary were pucking the ball out. Hogan was doing the best he could with what he was given. And just Limerick just consistently turned them over. They won primary possession. There was no real situation where Tipperary could win primary against them. Limerick turned them over. They break in spades. I mean, they break like in 5 or 6 lads from a certain pocket. And I love the move that the likes of Hegarty and Morrissey do, whereby if an opposition pucker comes down, someone like Conor O'Neill wins it in the halfback line, and Hegarty runs to his own goal, O'Neill pops it to him. And whatever it is with the psyche, the opposition, they just seem to back off Hegarty. They seem to head back towards their goal to cover. Then Hegarty has loads of time to fire into space. How many times did we see Morrissey do that last year? Like, unteamed times, and teams just can't nullify it. And it's little, like, intricacies like that whereby Limerick and top your puck out. They do a little kind of certain, I call it a stage run with a Morrissey, with a Hegarty, etc. Creates an opportunity inside, and you've got great finishers. Now you've got O'Dolly, I hope that's how you pronounce his name properly, Casey, Galan, Flanagan, and, you know, you bring on people who are extremely effective. I think the stat was there that the 4 subs scored last night. So if you've got a team that is A, dominated the puck out, B, is delivering to players that, like, even though the substitutions come in, there's no drop in quality, and C, extremely efficient. Like, it's very hard for a team to win at that rate. And I don't think anybody else in the country, I know nobody else in the country, has the panel strength that Limerick have. Remember a couple of years ago, we were questioning the panel strength. Is that a possibility? That's dead in the water. They have a strong, real strong 25 that no matter who's in there, you know, the train keeps on moving.
Mm. Murph, to use one of Skell's phrases, a bolter. Dunico Dolig is a bolter here, because... Yeah. We were all getting ready. Colin O'Neill was the man in waiting. He was going to be the guy who worked his way into that forward line. Eventually, you know, someone was going to break through, and it was going to be him. Now you've got Adolig, who is free scoring throughout the league so far this year. Got themselves a couple of points from play when Limerick weren't scoring from play in the first half at Porky Cueve last night. And it seems that maybe number six might be something that they work longer term with Cathal O'Neill. Like, what was your take on, before we talk about Adolig a little bit more, what was your take on how he played at six now that we've seen two matches?
It wouldn't convince me not to go with Hannon still. Like, I still go back to saying with Hannon is, oftentimes you don't notice Declan Hannon is there because he's just doing his job so well. But there was times last night, and I will put this down to, you know, early stages of the league. He's obviously there because he's a great distributor of the ball, you know, everything else also. But like, I see that they have him there looking to spray good ball into the forwards, which he's well capable of doing. But there was times where, you know, maybe just taking the wrong decision. Now, this is me being like, you know, really looking for things to be critical of, because when you were looking at him, you were saying, is he doing a better job at the moment than Declan Hannon? You'd be saying no. But Declan Hannon has enormously high standards to try and get to. I think if Declan Hannon was injured, or if there was, you know, another player injured, it's certainly an option. And I think they're trying to force, to try and find an area for Cathal O'Neill. Like, Cathal O'Neill's thing nearly is that he's been really good in so many areas, half forward, midfield, trying him at centre back now. I would still be going with Declan Hannon. Does he then slot into midfield? I don't think so, because two lads midfield are going really well. So it's kind of a tough situation. Well, not a tough situation. It's a situation every other team in the country would love to be in. But decision-making wise and everything, Hannon is still ahead of Cathal O'Neill there, because Hannon has the experience in the area. And I don't see at the moment, maybe give it time, maybe give it a few more games, and I can see, okay, Cathal O'Neill really getting comfortable there. But not yet have I seen an indicator that that would be long-term. Now, look, Declan Hannon, far be it for me to say, like, I mean, Declan Hannon, is he the oldest? No, Barnacki Quaid, he's the oldest outfield player from what I think of. I think he's 30. I mean, again, plenty of years left under him, potentially down the line. But at the moment, if Declan Hannon is fit, Declan Hannon plays there and Cathal O'Neill moves. So I don't see it. I don't see it just yet, because look, what a centre-back you have there in the first place.
Yeah, I suppose, Gail, if you want to be hypercritical, there were times when Tipperary looked to kind of bottle him up. But generally, when he got a chance to run, and maybe it'll be a case of just curbing these instincts a little bit, he was more than happy to play a pass, go again. He got up and took quite a few shots. Now, Limerick weren't all that accurate, particularly in the first half. But certainly, O'Neill didn't look like a guy who was just going to sit back in the pocket. This is a guy who wants to drive forward as a number six.
Yeah, like, if you have someone like Cathal O'Neill who has the ability to drive forward, you have a numerical advantage in heading forward. You know what I mean? Someone who predominantly plays his hurling as a forward, if he's able to win the ball primarily in the back, give it to a midfielder and go again, next thing you've got seven forwards and six backs, you know, it can create opportunity as well. But I don't know, is that his role? Is that the role of the Limerick six? Like, I think previously we'd have seen Declan Hannon would have drawn a kind of a, if you like, an imaginary line across the opposition 65 and wouldn't have passed that. That's what he's doing. He's popped pints in that range before, generally centrally. His main role, and Murph makes a good point about how he's seamless in his kind of transitioning from play from back to forward, is that he just does the simple things well. He's there as getting turned over. Ever. I don't ever see him getting turned over. He rarely gives the ball away in open play, but last night, let's say Cathal did give it away. I just think he's new to the position. I don't know what position he plays for his club, but it looked like to me last night that he was kind of, you know, trying to learn as he went along, which is fully granted. Like, he's probably thrust into that position by Kylie, which is a great sign in itself. Like, someone of you know, the level of Kylie Canurk and them as say, right, we're going to trust you in at number six. Have at it. You know, it's a great sign in itself that his ability must be, you know, off the charts, even beyond what we've seen publicly. But I think for him, like, I'd say he's going to be at a minimum midfielder forward. I don't see him come the championship time if like Limerick have their full complement, him being the half-back line, because you have to remember that, like, last night, Limerick are missing, let me off the top of my head now, Finn, Nash, Hannon, Hayes, Donovan. Do you know what I mean? Didn't start Morrissey, didn't start Flanagan. You know, so they've got a plethora of people to come in. And like, when you have all those people available, I see it very hard for the likes of Cathal O'Neill to play at six. So I imagine we see him in the forwards again.
Yeah, the injury update, by the way, so this is what John Kiley had to say at Porky Cueve after the game. So Sean Finn, Declan Hannon are back in full training. He says he's waiting for the right opportunity to return to action, so maybe they won't be risked against Galway next week. Kyle Hayes making good progress on an ankle injury that he picked up in training, and Darrow Donovan picked up a small bit of a sprain, so he's being rested. So it would seem that that's basically a few first team players there are right back in contention for Limerick by the end of the league and going round to the first round of championship against Clare. Also for Clare, I spotted Shane O'Donnell and Tony Kelly. Some people have photos of them doing a bit of a kind of a warm down, an activation, whatever you want to call it these days in Ennis. They weren't involved in the matchday panel, but it would appear that they're now coming back, and particularly with Tony Kelly, that is significant to say he's nearly coming back. Something that was also significant, Murph, during the game, I said there was a real stop-start feel to it, and the freeze didn't help, and we will talk about referees because there are so many of the questions that have come in comments are about the reffing standards across the weekend. But when Jason Ford puts the ball in the net, Limerick get the next four scores. When Tipperary scored their second goal, when Bonner Mara scored, Limerick get the next four scores. That's the one thing that will maybe eat away at Tipperary is they didn't kick on after those two goals. Taking the Morris one out of account because it was effectively the last puck of the game. But for the other two goals that they got, Tip just couldn't use that as a platform.
No, and like to be honest, you know, it was great that Tip got the goals for them, but Limerick weren't badly set up for the goals either. You know, like Jason Ford's goal, Limerick have enough lads back. It's just really, I suppose, a bit of an individual play. And a flick of a hurl there might have got to the ball at some stage. And the defenders didn't do a whole lot wrong. You look at Bonner Maher's goal again. Geez, a great goal. Didn't give up on the ball. Turns it over. You know, a great sidestep and buries it. And Jake Morris's goal as well. So, like, Limerick didn't do a whole lot wrong. But I just think it's inbuilt into these Limerick lads' heads that, you know, when they get a sniff of a team getting a purple patch, they just shut it out. They just kill it. They choke it dead. And they go back up the other end and start getting scores. It's like a reflex for them. You know, there's no message coming in from the sideline. There's no kind of major signal happening. They just know themselves that, you know, a team hits the back of the net. We haven't seen a team hit the back of the net three times against Limerick, I think, since 2017, I think it might be.
Do you want to guess who the two teams were that scored three goals against them? You won't guess this unless you've heard it already today.
Oh, okay. The two teams have scored three goals against them.
Oh, do you want to have a go, Skell?
What year? Will give me a clue.
2017. League 1 B.
Give me a clue. I just said 2017. 30 yeah. seconds ago.
But pretty sure it was in 1 B.
Okay, let me think now. So you thinking we won't get this?
Westmeath.
I think it's tricky. I think you'll either remember or you won't.
Wexford?
No, not Westmeath either. No.
Cork, actually.
No.
Should just keep saying teams, Gael. Good man.
Yeah, you're nearly there. So five teams left here that would have played in Division 1 that year.
Division 1.
Galway.
No.
I give up. I'm sick of this. I give up. Jesus Christ.
Offaly and Kerry.
Sweet baby Jesus, I never got that.
But they were also, I think they were the two games where Limerick weren't exactly going at it as hard as they would normally have gone. I remember the Offaly game and I saw John Kiley's quotes earlier, which is where Kerry had come up on it. So you wouldn't in a month of Sundays, you wouldn't have guessed that unless there was probably more clues. But
no.
I suppose I'm with Murph on this one, Skell. They weren't exactly... So two of them are turnovers and kind of individual mistakes. You probably wouldn't argue that it was a structural issue, say, with the Limerick defence, that everyone would have been looking at that and thinking we're going to get at them.
No.
Yeah, well, so there's the three goals you can imagine. So obviously we have the first one on the sideline. I was trying to think back over the last number of years, specifically from 18 onwards, call it six seasons. Have I ever seen that type of goal scored against Limerick? The first one? No. Have I ever seen the second one scored whereby kind of, let's call it a very... lackadaisical approach by Colin Coughlin to a pickup and a turnover goal. No. And have I ever seen a goal from Limerick that whereby they work a sharp hook out and they get turned over in their own half and it results in a goal? No. I can't think of any of them goals, those three, that we have seen in the past. So that's kind of a major structural deficiency. But I put it down to what Murph said. It's early league form. I do not think that's going to happen at all in Championship. And even listening to Kylie's interview, it's like that sometimes, you know, Limerick are so impressive at times that it's nearly a positive in Carly's mind, although he won't show publicly, that he has something to go back and beat them with, if you know what I'm trying to say. So this is very, you know, off the cuff. This is very poor of our standards. This is not what we're about. Now we have to go and fix it and go harder again. So I think that's exactly what he uses it for. He uses it as kind of fodder for the next 7 days training. And unfortunately, they've got Galway next.
And the other side as well is that, you know, penalty in the first half really that they didn't get, which, you know, there wasn't much shouting about it, but was it Gillan was fouled? It looked like a penalty. It looked like he was inside the box. It was borderline. I mean, look, you wouldn't have given out a whole lot if there was a penalty given.
He lands the goal side of the line is what I would argue there. Now, whether I think the way it was argued on the TV, so obviously Ger Canning and Michael Dygan were talking, but they both, I think, felt it was a penalty as well. It felt like maybe the initial foul on Gillan was outside And Gallant obviously does kind of fall forward as well, so that influences where he lands. But, I mean, he lands the other side of the line. It should have been a pen. And there's an argument it could have been a black card as well.
Yeah, well, I think if there's any doubt, like, I mean, again, we're looking at it a few times and we're still in doubt. Like, in the moment, look, just give the penalty and on you go. Considering what other, I know we'll get onto the referees, considering what other frees have been given for over the weekend, I thought that was, if games were being let flow, you'd go, okay, it was in the spirit of the way the game is being let flow. But a lot of stuff was being called up. So I was like, I thought that was a very clear penalty in the tone of how the frees were being called over the weekend.
Can I ask you a question? You know Jason Ford's goal? So he takes 12 steps on that. What's your thoughts on this? I know he's been, let's say, held and kind of pulled and held up, like, but like, what's your thoughts on like when a guy, basically two wrongs don't make a right? Is the advantage, I can understand the advantage is given, but why do you give an advantage when there's another foul being committed by the person who the original foul has been given again? It's hard to explain. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Ford has taken 12 steps, should not be pulled back and given, you know, as a penalty. The reason he's taken so much steps because he's held, is that right?
Well, do you know what? I didn't even cop that he had taken 12 steps. So, like, I mean, that's not something that initially popped into my head. Do you know what I mean? When you're looking at a situation unfold. Oftentimes, I thought I should have been free out, to be honest there. I thought he was fouling Mike Casey. But I didn't actually cop first time around. Like, you can only look for a certain amount of things during play. So let's say the ball lands in, he catches it. I'd say the referee was looking to see, right, is he being fouled? Is he fouling? Is the arms up around the head? Like, you can't also then always watch for steps as well. That might sound a bit silly. It might sound a bit, I don't know, maybe you can. But I, in the moment, wasn't going, right, Ford is after taking too many steps there. I was actually looking to see, was he being fouled? Was he going to get a shot away? What's the story? And to be honest, my feeling was at the time that, yeah, well, like, I mean, if he was fouled, you know, just blow it back. You can't let someone off with 12 steps. And like, funny enough, if you look at the Clare Kilkenny game, like Adrian Mullen, something similar, was fouled in the first half, and James Owens blew it up when he was popping it to TJ, and TJ was true on goal. And like, at that stage, as a Kilkenny person, you were going, oh geez, let it play on. But Adrian had taken a lot of steps as well. So kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't in lots of ways. People want to see the game play on. There's almost an unwritten rule where if a fella is being quite clearly fouled and he's after standing over the four steps, he's nearly given automatically compensatory three or four steps on you go, just play it on, will you? Nobody speaks about it, but it is kind of nearly in the game. So if I'm trying to look at it in a balanced view, I shouted at the telly when James Owens blew it up for Adrian Mullen passing it off to TJ. But Adrian had probably taken about 10 steps, do you know? In the same way with the Jason Ford run. But look, what I would say automatically, first time looking at Jason Ford's goal, I didn't actually even tweak that he was after taking a lot of steps.
Defenders Union, you should have been all over that. You should have been saying he's anything more than 300% blow this up. Defenders Union as well, Murph. Would you have felt for Ronan Barr when he comes out with the ball and he ends up getting booked for barging?
It wasn't a yellow. I wouldn't be given a yellow for it anyway. Like, Ronan Barr kind of... It's a situation where, look, I mean, he's coming out. He has his own momentum.
To be fair, he's welcoming the contact is what I'd say.
Yeah, he is welcoming the contact. Like, it's a dark art, to be honest, is what I'd say. He wasn't going to cause any injuries. He himself, you know, you're talking about right away, he himself was driving out with the ball and he was being closed. I don't think it was yellow. Like, that's the first I'll say. Free in, yeah, okay. Like, I mean, he came out, he barged. No, like, I'm not saying, like, I mean, leave it at a free in if you're going to leave it at free in, but no need to book the man. But I think in that situation, he's coming up, there's a collision, Limerick man doesn't go down soft, let him out with the ball, let him play on, because it's like we're getting too much into the weeds on these ones from a blowing them up point of view. I didn't see a whole lot wrong with it straight away. I was actually kind of happy to see a nice bit of contact, and maybe it might, I suppose, ignite the game a small bit. But no, it definitely wasn't yellow. It was very harsh, the whole thing, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't know, Skell, whether there was some kind of dictate that happened in the last week or during one of the two breaks here that went pull up as many potential fouls as you possibly can. But there was also the one where Jason Ford comes in on Keane Lynch and Keane Lynch goes down. And you can just see how annoyed Ford is that it felt like it was, from his point of view, a fair hit and a free was given. But like across the weekend, there were a lot of frees that kind of left the crowd not particularly happy, I would say, across a few of them.
Yeah.
Did it feel like a few of them were too soft? I know Eddie Brennan was saying at the weekend it almost feels like it's going to non-contact with some of the frees that were actually given.
Well, there's a couple of things here. And first of all, I think from a technical perspective, like when a technical free is given away, like a chop or the clear freeze, three catches, etc. We said before, that's not an opinion-based decision. You know what I mean? That's a clear decision whereby the referee has 100% knowledge, I have to give this free, right? I couldn't really grasp what way the referees were kind of, what they were looking for. Was there consistency in all the decision-making? Because in the games I watched, obviously, Tipperary and Limerick, I watched Wexford and Waterford, and I watched Kilkenny and Clare. And the three performances were chalk and cheese, if you ask me. I couldn't, there was no real rhythm to the way the referees were looking for. And it's like it was all opinion-based refereeing. There was no kind of, how do I say, specific set of rules book around, and it's all around the tackle, if you ask me. Because, I know the referees get a hard time, and sometimes it's richly deserved. But as well, some of the teams nowadays, the tackling is really poor. Like, it's really, really bad. And I don't know, is it because of the conditions, the pitch, the weather, not just being up to sharpness, but a lot of this is lazy arm dragging, hurls up around the neck, etc. And we have no choice but to give freeze against them. So that's one side of it, but not all of it. The other side of it is, what really annoys me is the fact that referees keep getting sold on these frees that have been bought. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, when you've played the game, you understand, let's say, when a guy is buying a free. For example, if a forward's running to the ball, he grabs your hurl and falls over. He's after buying a free, like it looked like you're after getting contact. And what's happening now a lot of the days is that the guys are getting cute and they're trying to buy the frees. But what's vexing is referees are falling for it. Even though you might identify this as the referee beforehand. Like, I remember vividly last year, I said something to a referee in a club game. This lad is going to do this in the game. He's buying the free. And lo and behold, first time he did it, he fucking bought the free. Do you know what I mean? Even though I kind of informed him. So it's hard to explain that the referees are getting oversold and they're not thinking in real time. Do you know what I mean? I don't know, are they being given a brief? Okay, let's clamp down on this today. Let's clamp on that tomorrow, etc. But there seems to be no consistency. And it's very frustrating for the public, people at games. And like, you look at the Galway game today. I didn't see the game, mind you, but there was an unmerciful amount of cards. And I don't think any game that is not so-called a dirty game would warrant all those cards. And like, on the Ronan Maher side of things, it's not a card. I think he checks his run, because if he keeps going straight, he's going to get contact. He's going to get bottled up by the Limerick lad anyway. I think he checks his run, and you know, it's unfortunate. I don't want to see that go out of the game. I don't want to see physicality go out of the game at all. I want to see those hard challenges, you know what I mean? And kind of use the body. It's the hurdle stuff that really kind of creates a bit of confusion. And even there was one today, Martin Martija, he went to go flick the ball away in the first half.
Yeah,
it was a dive by the Clare man, because he sold himself, right? Free. And you're like, geez, that must be so frustrating for Kinney. Because again, they got sold. But I don't think we could be here in 5 years' time talking about referees and it'll be the same thing. Because just, I don't know, is the game too fast for them, respectfully speaking? Or is that we're not giving them a clear set of parameters to officiate? It's hard to tell.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of questions coming in about the referees. Necessary, and given the appalling refereeing we saw this weekend, what would the guys think about a GAA Centre of Excellence for referees? We got quite a few asking about, you know, what about the idea of, say, referees going full-time to try and improve the quality? Patrick Hickey said, do you think the GAA should be trying to recruit full-time referees? Standards, in my opinion, seem to be getting worse in the last number of years. I know on the Instagram we had a couple of questions of a very similar variety saying, is there a way of actually improving the standard of refereeing?
So can I ask you sorry to interrupt you. Are Premiership soccer referees full-time? They surely are.
They are now, yeah. So they moved away from it. Ooh. I'm going to say David Ellery was probably one of the last ones. Remember, he was a principal, I think, in one of the big public schools in the UK. And then
Would you guys agree with me?
Was your man Howard Webb? Was he not a policeman? I know we're getting off point here now.
Oh, I think Howard Webb. Yeah, Howard Webb might have been policeman, but they're gone full time.
They were. My question being is, like, they're not really up to scratch. They have plenty of controversy as well, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean,
on a much slower game, if you ask me, smaller field. So.
Well, if they went professional then, so Murph, I'll give you first shout, would it actually improve the quality of refereeing? And bear in mind as well, I know referees around the country who've been asked about the idea of going professional, and they said they wouldn't actually be attracted to it, that the idea of, say, having to give up the day job to become a professional referee wouldn't appeal. So there's that side to it. But would standards actually improve if, say, these referees were full-time concentrated on being refs?
I don't believe so. I don't think, look, first of all, I don't think it's actually a realistic thing we can do in the GAA at the moment, because, I mean, that's how many referees are you talking about being professional? Is it just the inter-county people? And then you're just putting them down to, that's like you're saying, that's just their job. I actually think a lot of these lads prefer having a day job as well. Like, I mean, my opinion would be these, you know, referees want to get into refereeing. First of all, they want to be involved in the GA. They see themselves that they, you know, can have a positive impact on the game and so on. And it's, you know, it's a thankless job for so many referees. It is a thankless job. I think a lot of them, you know, having their work is an escape. Would you be a full-time referee? The culture within the GA as well. And it has to be said as well, like, I mean, we had a conversation, was it only 6 months ago or so, about the hardship referees get. And it was a very big topic, you know, a year ago about how much hardship referees get. Like, not only if people are talking about, like, and I do think the standard refereeing wasn't great over the weekend. And I say that as a collective because I think there must have been something said about high tackles and so on. But at the same time, for us as supporters, there also has to be a culture shift a little bit as well. Because I would say, unless you've actually refereed, now I've never refereed a game, I'd say it's actually a little bit harder than we think. And the parameters around in which, you know, they have to make decisions, it's tough. It is very tough. That doesn't excuse anything over the weekend. Like we were saying, I do think that it was whatever was said over the last week or 2 weeks in terms of targeting certain frees, because it was across the board, and particularly the high tackle and how soft they were given over the weekend seemed to be a point. But make a referee professional, I don't necessarily see it. Like Skehill, you were saying there, you know, we see it in the Premier League where they have millions to pump at this, yet every week. I mean, even today, you look at, we're getting off point with different sports, but you look at Man City and Liverpool, and like one of the last kicks of the game, the VAR, they have everything, and there's still people debating whether it was a high foot and different things. It's very tough. Hurling's a faster sport, and there's a lot more, like, you involve the hurl in that as well, and the fact that, you know, the hurl can be slapping down and different things make, you know, there's so many more fouls that can happen in hurling. I don't think it would improve it, to be honest. Potentially where, to clear everything up is a clear definition, or a more clear definition of the rules. There just seems to be, you know, it seems to be this thing the whole time of, like, they dial up one rule and say, right, this rule now, this is, you know, the center of attention, and we're going to call this, you know, all day long for the next 2 or 3 weeks, and that disappears, and there's a different rule in, and yeah, it's just inconsistency. It's so inconsistent. Like a big one there over the weekend that I saw was, and the first time I saw it was Jason Ford with, I think it was Cathal O'Neill. Cathal O'Neill went over Rose Ball. Jason Ford was going after him. He starts to hurl at hip height. As Cathal O'Neill is progressing, he raises his hands up. Naturally, Jason Ford's hurl, he can't get it out of there, is now gone up to shoulder height with Cathal O'Neill, and it's a free out for a high tackle. And he didn't do a high tackle. It wasn't, you know, but that was blown because obviously Liam Gordon was looking for that foul, because I feel that was something that had been said. And I thought, okay, well, this is just after happening here. But I saw it throughout the rest of the games, and consistently through the rest of the games, you know, I saw this tackle of Skehill, kind of mentioned it earlier. Players looking for it. Players grabbing the lad's hand, and the player can't do it, can't pull their hand away, can't pull their hurl away, but it's actually the person that gets the free is the person instigating the issue here, is the person that's grabbing on. And it happened across the board, but because players know that referees are going to blow for that, players are looking for it. Players are going, okay, well, if I can get the hurl up here, the referee is going to have to blow a free for me, and then, you know, it's a tap-in. Whereas to discourage that, you know, if you stop blowing it and you blow a lad up for travelling, because, you know, if he's standing there and he's trying to play for a free, he's going to travel. And then you give a free for that. Well, that kind of discourages that type of free. But look, I know I'm getting long-winded there, but I don't think going professional will get rid of any of these issues. I think clarity between players, between referees. Skehill, you said a few years ago, like, you know, referees used to come into the dressing room, you used to get whoever it was used to come into you. I think more communication between referees and players, like the extent of the communication I would have had as a player would have been, you know, the captain going up for the toss, coming back and say, listen, lads, no mountain to the referee. If you grab the jersey, it's going to be a free in. And you get three rules given to you that are going to be the main rules for that day, and you try and avoid them. So I think great communication between that. But also the last point I would say is just that, I just think the culture around refereeing, it's so tough. You know, one time we're saying that, you know, referees have a very tough job, the following time we're absolutely hounding them as well for, you know, having a bad weekend. There's no one pill that will solve this, and I don't think professionalism necessarily will solve it either.
Is it more evident in league games than it is in championship?
It is, yeah. No, completely, yeah. Like in league games as well, like last night, And we even touched back to saying why, maybe why Cathal O'Neill found it tough at centre back, because it was raining, because it was, you know, tough weather, ball was heavy, you know, hurls are covered in rain and it's, you're slipping around. There's a lot more freeze. There's a lot more lads getting dragged into dogfights, lads getting dragged into scraps, players falling. It's tougher. When you get into the summer hurling, it's a bit more free flow. The ball, again, is even moving faster. There's not as many rucks. So it does, but it does seem to be a case, though, as much as players are, you know, blooding themselves in the league, referees seem to get blooded as well in the league, in terms of, you know, they go and have their meetings, they come back out, and they're all on the same wavelength in terms of, right, lads, we're blown for this free each week. And that seems to be the tone of the league the whole time. For as long as I'm watching Ireland, that seems to be the tone of the league, you know.
Yeah, there always seems to be instructions at some point, you know, like it was the hand pass again a couple of times over the last 2 years, where it was really clamped upon for a couple of rounds, usually in the middle of the league, and then by the time championship came around, it wasn't really happening. I did notice quite a few thrown passes that were actually getting called across the weekend as well. So again, I wonder if there was a bit of an instruction about that, because I think some of them would have probably been let go normally, and it'd be interesting to see if, especially what we saw at Páirc Uí Chaoimh last night, some of those passes that were being called, if they would get called if we were in the middle of the summer. But Limerick track up Páirc Uí Chaoimh really good as well. They lost first round of the league there last year, but aside from that, it's a good record. I can see where they were happy enough to go down there to play against Tipperary and to get another one out there.
The record is good everywhere.
It is. To be fair, I think on the moon, the record would be pretty good. I'm glad, and we will get around to it. Tough places to go proved to be a tough place to go when Kilkenny lost against Clare today. I'm thinking tough place to go for Limerick. Could well be going back to Ennis, but let's talk about that again. Galway, if we can just kind of touch on the other two games in 1B before we jump across to 1A. So, I don't know, Skell, whether this will feel like an opportunity missed for Dublin in the grand scheme of things, because Galway finished the match with 12 men and Dublin conceded 10 scores without reply in the third quarter of the game. Like, they got themselves into a pretty good position. So Donal Burke scores 1-9. They get to 1-13 after 50 minutes. But in the 20-plus minutes that followed, they only scored two more points. And Galway kind of coasted home in the end, 123 to 115. Conor Cooney with 11 points. I wonder, does Micheál look back at this and think that was a really big opportunity there?
Like, if you put yourself physically in the Galway shoes now, right, and you say you've only got 12 men, obviously 11 outfielders versus 14. How do you outscore Dublin? How like, do you know what I mean? How do you, let's say, go in the ascendancy in that game? Like, it's hard for me to even envisage. So I'd say Micheál would be disappointed with the reaction, if you like. But if you get him broiled in a kind of a tight game with Dublin, they're hard to beat. And generally those tight games occur in Dublin. So when it occurs in Galway, A, it's a surprise to me. And B, I'm kind of happy to see that we came out the right side of it, even though we had a numerical disadvantage. But I think there's a certain amount of opportunities that Micheál is looking for to take down, you know, big teams. Let's call them the top three or four, five teams. And this would probably be, he looked at it as being one of them, because he looks like he's been looking for a spark, you know, to try and ignite this panel, ignite this group. They fell out of the championship kind of fairly flat last year against Clare, and you were kind of hoping for better things, you know. There's been kind of negative press around them over the last 3 weeks, particularly after the Limerick performance. And you were saying, right, here's the reaction now. Here's going to be the big game. And there was all signs of it actually for about, you know, 45 minutes, but then they just petered out. And that's probably the most concerning part of it all for me, Hull, is the fact that, like, they put up a fight for 2/3 of it, but then when they had the number advantage, the fight left them. So good for them to have Donal Burke back. But again, I feel like we're singing the same tune as last year, as you can't depend on him. Because again, a shoot on sight merchant. And if you're working that way, you're working, you know, to a short championship exit. So, look, from a goal perspective, it's the job is done. Unfortunately, with Limerick coming to town next week, you're missing two of your most important players in your captain and vice captain. So, you're hopeful that the likes of, you know, Cathal Manning can get back, Brian Kincannon can get back, etc. Johnny Glynn can get back, and we'll see what we can sort them. But again, it's a very tough ask next week. So, as I sit here, I don't expect us to be in league semi-final, truthfully speaking.
Okay, Ronan Hayes was sent off for Dublin as well, so they also didn't finish with 15 men in the end. But this is one of these where, I guess, look, it condemns Dublin almost certainly to be playing in Division 1B for next year. So we know that Galway are going to take one of the top three spots along with Tipperary and Limerick, so they're guaranteed a place in the top flight for next year. Is it a bad thing for Dublin, and we'll get around to Waterford playing in 1B next year? Is it that big a deal that they won't be mixing it with the top seven in the country?
It's not that big of a deal, no, but it's maybe a marker for Dublin to go, okay, they can indicate that their standards really dropping down at this stage. You know, they've probably existed, I suppose, for quite a few years with the top teams, without really taking any big scalps, without really, I suppose, making any big drives towards silverware. So maybe now this is a marker where they can actually identify to say, right, well, from the days of where Anthony Daly was and what he was working with and all the hope and promise, well, this is now a step down. And I think, to be fair, I know we'll get onto it, I think Watford will look at that as well in terms of, like, I mean, across the board, we're not really showing huge signs here of actually kicking on compared to you go back 5, 6, 7 years ago. So it's like, I mean, it's not doomsday stuff, but it's certainly stuff where Dublin can look at and go, okay, we're not headed in the right direction here, and assess what is the situation. Is it what's feeding in from underage? Is it the draw of people going to football? What is it? But we're certainly not competing at a level. And I mean, regardless what you say there, coming, you know, playing a Galway team that are down to 12 men, you know, still being bet by 8 points is not a great reflection there either. So, look, it's a moment for Dublin certainly to take stock. Look, Michal Dunhu couldn't have done any more as far as I can see either. You know, he doesn't have a huge amount to work with there. But I just think that, yeah, maybe Dublin Hurling will just have to look at this and go, okay, this is a moment, a significant enough moment where we can see our levels are dropping here. And if we don't get a hold of it fairly quick, you know, our stock may drop even further.
Yeah. The other game in 1B was a win in Mullingar for Westmeath against Antrim. Joe Fortune, the Westmeath manager, said pretty much straight afterwards, doesn't matter whether they beat Dublin or not next week. He said everything for their entire year is on winning the Joe McDonagh. He said the only job he has this year is to win the Joe McDonagh. So he saw this game as being a regression of performance by comparison, he said afterwards, compared to the Tipperary and Limerick games where they had played quite well. So despite the fact they came out by 6 points, he felt the performance was actually down on those two fixtures. But they are getting players back, and again, more of them were back this time round. Another of Scales former teammates, Davy Glennon, putting the ball into the net in the 60th minute for Westmeath as they picked up their first win of the campaign. Again, David Williams, very important, scored 8 points for them. Their captain from last year, Killian Doyle, came on in the second half, so they've got Angus Clark to come back next week. Starting to think they're just building nicely towards the Joe McDonagh. Interesting to see what kind of team they put out next week against Dublin, because Westmeath feel that's still a dead rubber. Even if they get to 4 points, they're not going to be qualifying for 1A anyway. The other goal coming from Owen Keyes. The other point which was made by some of the Westmeath players afterwards was that Antrim obviously have been rocked by not having, say, some of the Dunloy players this time around. Their panel has been heavily impacted by players who aren't there. Neil McManus's retirement. All this has kind of weakened the group of players that they have right now. But Antrim should have beaten Dublin in Antrim if it wasn't for a mistake right at the end of the game. So I don't know if we necessarily need to write them off and say that they're in massive trouble in the Leinster Championship before it even gets underway. But obviously Antrim have got a bit to do over the next few weeks. So that was a 1-12 to 1-8 lead for Westmeath this half-time, and they kind of kept that distance throughout the second half, and the end won by 6 points. So that's Westmeath up and running with a victory after two good performances. That brings us round nicely to Murph. Tough place to go, Ennis. 19 points to 16. Clare got that win. So Kilkenny, as you mentioned, won the last two All-Ireland semi-finals. 11 years now since Kilkenny have got anything from Ennis, which again isn't really that big a stat when you consider they don't play each other there every year. But this was a Clare team who kind of finished strongly enough, despite Kilkenny having some chances themselves when the sides were locked at 16 apiece. And in the end, Clare got through by 19 points to 16.
Yeah, look, Clare were really in control for quite a bit of the game. They started really well. Just, you know, when you compare the two sides in terms of the first 10 or 15 minutes, Clare really started with a lot of vigour. They were really going at Kilkenny. They were driving forward really well and actually creating a lot of space for the full forward line, who were getting onto ball and were either taking on their men, getting fouled, or recycling really well. That was, for me, what the one thing that was really identifiable in the first 15, 20 minutes was just that they had those three options quite a bit. They were getting a nice few frees. Granted, you know, their free taking, they'll be looking at it saying, we hit a few wide. We even hit a few wide that went over the bar. So, like, there's a few things there where, like, they'll be saying, right, we need to improve there. But when you compare it with Kilkenny, you know, quite a few balls were going up into the forward line and they were just getting turned over. Clare were really well set up, and Kilkenny just weren't making that ball stick when it was getting into towards, let's say, the full forward line, and they weren't getting as much off it. So, look, Kilkenny were chasing quite a bit here in terms of Clare were really setting out the stall. But, like, Kilkenny came into it. They had opportunities, certainly. They created, you know, I suppose, decent enough goal opportunities as well. But look, there was a bit between the teeth here with Clare as well. And there was a nice bit of bite to the game as well, you have to say. Between that and between Watford and Wexford, there was actually a nice bit of a tussle to it. You know, players were getting fairly fiery and it was good to see that there was something on the line. But no, you'd have to say, in fairness, like Skehill, you said before we came on, Kilkenny did have opportunities there where they maybe went for goal. And in hindsight, they look back and say, right, well, if we took those points, we might have came away with the result even at the end. But nevertheless, Clare kicked on. They got a few great points. Peter Duggan, great long-range point. Dermot Ryan was popping up as well. And I said it last week. Like, to be fair, I did say that I thought Clare, you know, in Ennis, you know, Derek, in fairness as well, no more than Brian Lohan, is giving players chances as well. But I just thought from the form that I saw with Clare and how strong they have been in Ennis, you know, that I just thought they might pip them by, I think I said last week, 2 points or so. But look, they were full value for money. I think Kilkenny will still be happy. I don't think Derek Ling will be overly disappointed with how the lads played. There's certainly things to improve on. But he can certainly point to certain areas where Kilkenny were shut down, that it was really good defending by Clare. It was really good challenging and so on. I think both sides won't be happy again with the refereeing. I think James Owens, in fairness, he had a few good calls, but I think there was a good few as well where you could hear the frustration from the crowd as well. You know, kind of stifled the game a little bit. And I wonder if this game might have actually opened out even more again if it wasn't a little bit stop-start. So, but look, you know, Clare, full value for it. And you could see even at the end what it meant to him. Like, I mean, it was, in fairness, it was right down to the last puck of the ball as well. So, look, good game. I don't think Kenny are savagely disappointed going home. And I don't think Clare will be getting too ahead of themselves either. Like, you know, one more match, one and move on.
Yeah. I suppose, Gail, as you said, just for a way to come on, so TJ Reid, Mikey Butler, both the kind of goal chances towards the end of the game. You wonder if Kilkenny, rather than trying to work for the goal, pop them over, it makes it a bit more difficult from Clare. But I'm giving a lot of credit to Clare for scoring. I think it was 3 points in injury time to pretty much just swing it in their own favour. Yeah. Eamon Foody made a good save from TJ Reid, particularly to win out that game in the end.
Yeah, and I think the goal opportunities when it comes, I think the only clear cut one for me was probably the Mikey Butler one where he got in. That's one where you say you got to keep going for the goal. But I was just asking Murph beforehand, like, is, you know, with 71 minutes on the clock, you're only kind of two, three points down. You had like four attacks. Could you play the game and head for the points? It's the question we always ask, and invariably it always ends up that they don't get the goal. And we go talking about asking this question, but. Like, I thought it was a really good contest, Murph. I agree with you heartily. It was probably the contest of the weekend prior to the Wexford Waterford game coming on. And I was just really, I was looking to see what Clare were going to do systematically. And I thought they got a really good split with the likes of Gallivan and Lowe in the midfield, who did an awful lot of the, you know, excuse the pun, donkey work. Like, they did an awful lot of heavy load stuff. And they put so much pressure on Kilkenny in the middle third that the ball that was going to Kilkenny was so bad that, like, you couldn't ask much of Joaquin Kenny or Hedger or even Owen Cody. If I'm not mistaken, Owen Cody's first possession was when he got the point off that lovely Kenny pickup during the 26 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, someone as invaluable as Owen Cody, you want him on the ball every second minute. And, like, AJ Mullen, if you look at the pressure he was on in terms of his shots, it's, I think he's the same amount of shots as Jeff Fitzgerald in the game, but came away with far less. Like, so I just thought Clare's work ethic and balance in the middle was excellent. And then when you team that with the way that Duggan and Fitzgerald played together, where they come into midfield, they go out the back, we have forward line, really good. So they had a great go forward platform, you know, for shooting, obviously, but then they had a great, you know, work ethic as well to assist the Lohans, the Galvins, the Leans, etc., at midfield. And what allowed in as well, it gave, you know, David Reedy great opportunities to go laterally. You see Richie Reid showing up on the sidelines with Reedy, and, like, that's where you don't want your six, really. So I was looking and seeing that Duggan and Fitzgerald were going to say up and down the pitch into midfield, and then you had Reedy going left and right, and it caused the Kilkenny defence an awful lot of trouble, and it didn't allow the likes of Smith and Rogers to get some ball inside. So their structure was really, really good. And, like, when you add more personnel, more top level personnel, mind you, O'Donnell and Kelly to come into that, it only adds to it. But I think they've found two good lads. Like, sometimes we don't give enough credit, you know, to people that don't play as well as Tony Kelly or Shane Dolan, in the likes of Darragh Lohan, like, you know, and, like, same with Liam, same with Jim O'Dwyer, although he's there a couple of years. Like, they don't look like the top level intercounty hurlers, but they're doing a really good job that fits that clear team. So, like, I think it's going to be hard to push them out, really hard to push them out, because what they're doing is benefiting the team so well, and they're winning against big teams. So it'll be interesting to see how they go forward, like, and when the big names come back. Obviously, Shane Dolan and Tony Kelly, they go in, but when others come back, are they getting in? Like, I mean, like, who would you be saying? What was your man? Ryan Taylor, isn't it? He was one. Meehan's another. Like, that that lads that were featured last year on the back of, you know, kind of wing forward centre field. So I just think that they have a really good squad built, a mixture of youth and experience, and they were full value for the performance. Kilkenny, sluggish enough, I have to say, at times, but they were, the hurling was not as sharp as you'd associate with Kilkenny. But again, a game of this magnitude, relatively low, but it'll bring them on. So, yeah, not a bad game all round.
Yeah, just for a look at Kilkenny, for both of you, fashion watch, we were given out by Cork a few weeks ago. That jersey will never be worn again, it was said at the Cork County Board meeting. Apparently it sold really well, so what do we know about fashion if it sold really well? But this Clare jersey that we got to see today, for me, Murph, this is a winner. I really like this blue jersey.
Yeah, I liked it. Well, like all blue is generally, you know, it works, it's quite simple. But no, it's really nice. Big fan of it. Yeah, I don't think it was from Michael Cusick was the purpose behind it. Yeah. What you said?
Big fan of it. Big fan. Go on, boy. So.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You can't say anything. Yeah, okay. I'm a medium-sized fan of it. So. No, it's a nice jersey. A nice match to commemorate it as well. But yeah, sure. Probably last time you see that jersey as well. I don't see them playing it again. Maybe they do have plans to play in it, but no, yeah, nice jersey watch.
Well, design one similar to it. Skell, are you a fan or not a fan of this jersey?
I couldn't care less, Will, to be honest.
Fair enough.
Look at it. Is it a hot topic? No.
God almighty. You know, you ask a quite a simple question, Will, like, you know.
I really like this. Look, I thought after we took a monumental dump on the Cork jersey and people were saying, you guys have no idea what you're talking about, this jersey's cool and the kids are going to love it, and then I see a jersey I actually really like today and I think, oh, well, let's have a chat. No, fine, there are more important things to talk about. In fact,
in your opinion, yeah, what's the nicest jersey in the country?
Ooh,
oh, good. Underrated ones. Okay, go on. Yeah,
I like Wexford's current one. I like Tipperary's current one. I'll have to have a think about the other ones, but those two are particularly nice this year.
Are we talking hurling or are we just talking jerseys in general?
Ah, you can have jerseys in general, but they're the two certainly of hurling counties right now that I quite like.
Hmm. Sligo jersey is always a great one.
Yeah.
Black. It's great.
I like Derry's red and white combo, but yeah.
What jersey's nice now?
Scale, you better have
one. This is like a Father Ted moment. Of course, they're all lovely jerseys, but
always loved the Antrim one.
Yeah, Antrim's a nice one, yeah.
Well, white shorts or black shorts with Antrim, though? That's the
white.
Best. White, okay.
Have to match the stripes in the jersey, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Do you know the thing about it as well is I got an Offaly jersey a good few years ago. I swapped it after a game. And
a fine jersey, no doubt. Go on.
Yeah, it was one of them. Like, do you know when you get a jersey, let's say that you hadn't swapped before, so it's kind of then becomes your, you know, you might have two Cork jerseys, you might have two Tipperary, whatever, but now you have an Offaly one. But I swapped it for a Meath one when I was out in America. I swapped it with a lad from Meath, and that was a nice jersey. Now it was a coloured one back 2012-13. It was a nice one.
Did you give it away?
I didn't give it away. I still have it. It's upstairs.
Oh, the Meath one I'm talking about.
I swapped the Offaly one, yeah, for a Meath one. I said, well, I have a better chance of getting an Offaly one than I do a Meath one. So but yeah, geez, favourite jerseys. We might have to revisit that one.
Yeah,
I think Carlo was more worked with it.
Yeah, it's a lot of colours to work with, though.
It's a lot of colours.
I think sometimes when they've gone with ones where it's a dominant colour out of their red, green, yellow, and they got a bit of white getting on there as well, sometimes it works better when it's almost more of one.
Yeah.
But then again, I've heard Carlo fans who love the idea of having bits of green, bits of yellow, bits of red.
I'm sure Will Lookers, everyone loves the smell of their own fart.
I'm sure they do. You didn't give us one. You decided to just have a go at Carlo.
I said Antrim.
All right, sorry.
It is okay. Antrim.
Yes, Antrim. Take that back,
yeah. Antrim. Okay. Yeah.
I apologise and I withdraw my criticism.
Jesus.
The Antrim jersey is nice.
This is a tough, it's a hot and heavy pot. I'll give you that one.
Today's Mother's Day. Actually, did you bring out the Mother's Day, G? To get the mother bouquet of flowers.
Well, granted that she's my mother, she's on holidays actually, so that's where I got it from.
Oh, geez.
Did you send her on holiday at least? Are you?
No, I didn't send. Oh, Jesus, no, she.
She's gotten a peacekeeping mission to live.
She's retired now. No, she's retired. She retired recently, so she's making the most of. Yeah. Oh, she is absolutely fair. Yeah. Dead right. That's what she retired for. Jesus, get up and get a bit of sun in the middle of March.
Not too bad. Right. So Ryan was in contact and he wants us to give some flowers to Wexford here. He says, surely it's about time the people do hurling podcasts throughout Ireland start giving Wexford some credit. Besides Limerick, the only unbeaten team in the league at the moment and pre-season competitions. That's with more first-team players out injured than any other county. Again, I'm not arguing against this at all. I certainly took a little bit of Wexford ire a few weeks ago for being outed for an error. But anyway,
I picked Seamus Casey last week as my... Was it last week or the week previous? As my... my standout player of the league so far.
Yeah.
As a Kenny man, I thought that was very big of me. What are you looking at, Skehill, now? You're trying to...
I thought you picked Gerard O'Connor.
No, I said he was the obvious one, but I knew, like, let's say you were going to pick him or Will was going to pick him, but I was like, I thought Seamus Casey's been going really well.
Yeah. So, the Wexford injury list, before we talk about the win against Waterford today. Lee Chin, Liam Ryan, Conor Davitt, Jack O'Connor, Conor McDonald, Rory O'Connor, Limo McGovern, D. O'Keefe, Conal Flood, Oisín Foley. So that's two All-Stars, other guys who've been nominated for them, key players who played throughout the team. That is, to be fair, Skell, that's a lot of first-team players that are missing for Wexford. And to be fair to Roster, he's bringing in some of these younger players that he knows a bit about. He's mixing the blend up a little bit. And when these guys start to come back in, Wexford have got a nice bit of depth. And you'd have to be happy enough now at this point, one round before the end of the league. Here they are with a chance of reaching the semi-final. Guaranteed they're going to be in 1A for 2025. They've done pretty well, haven't they?
Oh, they've done really well. And I think, look, regardless of opposition today, if you're looking at a team set up right, you'd always say you want your forwards to be the first line of defence. And I'm looking at Lawler, you know, Byrne, Casey, etc. And they were electricless. Like, they were really electric. And the way they were able to retain the ball inside... You know, win the ball 50-50. And even if they lost the ball, you know, causing such hassle for Waterford coming out of defence, that was the platform for their success. I think if you look at them, the Wexford team as a whole, yes, the most played well, but those three guys up top were flipping brilliant. They're awesome. You know what I mean? And it's definitely, as a Wexford supporter, or even a Wexford player, it's great to see that the lads can come in, who were relatively unknown, me included, relatively unknown, looking at the likes of Lawler and going, geez, you're a fair unit. You know, even Casey winning the ball 50-50, even for the goal, even though by chance. But like Keane Burnless, he's a fair operator.
Yeah.
You know, and then I can't pronounce that, he's Byrne as well, the guy that came in midfield. But he's got the kind of double bar name. Is he Dunbar as well?
Corey Byrne.
Corey Byrne Dunbar. Like, again, looks very similar to Keane Byrne, if you like, but again, adds energy. But like, they're three things. Number one, their fitness was excellent today. Two, their work ethic. And they were far better off the ball than Waterford were today. So like, when Waterford had the ball going forward, to say, Wexford were able to kind of stick with them, tackle them, turn them over key times. When Wexford had the ball, Waterford couldn't do that. They couldn't. So when Wexford were breaking with numbers in the middle third going forward, they had bundles of energy and direct line running, which is very, very hard to stop. And just Waterford didn't seem to have that. And I think if you're looking for like a few guys to come into the team now in this league whilst you're waiting the injury people to come back, you've got loads. Like, you've got loads. Like, there's a lot of lads there that I would put my hand up and say I didn't know who they were before they started playing the league, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And right now they're on the road to becoming household names. So yes, you named off a good injury list there, Will. But I think what Roster has done, again, I'm not in setup. He's put, and I wonder, is this because it's a Wexford man over Wexford? I don't know. But like, it seems like they've got today was a real prideful performance, if you know what I mean. You know, loads of energy, like never say die attitude. And and if you watch Roster on the sideline, he was very animated, but in a positive form. He was like, he was playing with them. Do you know what I mean? There was nothing negative about him. There was nothing towards the referee, as far as I could see. Nothing towards his opposite number, but it was like he was kind of pushing the Wexford players as much as he could. And like, if you look out at your manager, you want to get energy off him, but you want to get positive energy. And it seems like that's what's happening. And look, this could be a snowball effect. It's moving in the right direction, because we were saying last week, Wexford need new guys to come in and push this a bit further than what has been done over the last 10 years. And look, I thought it was a really good performance when you go 5 points down at one stage, then 6 points down, and then to battle back to close the gap to 3 points prior to halftime, which was critical. You know, and then to see out the performance, really impressive. And then full value for the victory. There's no look about this.
Yeah, just on the point about Wexford as well, coming off the back of last week, because we were talking about, you know, this new kind of breed of player coming through, and obviously this is a big win for them against Waterford today, but Stephen KR2TI, to give him his full title, said, correct, that Wexford group won four Provincial 21s, contested in two All-Ireland finals at under 21. 2019 still haunts us. The mood in the county is Davy had stuck with the same lads for too long, and people are prepared now to be fairly patient with Rossi. Still not beyond us to reach a Leinster final if things go right this summer. And then Barry Power had responded to that and said 100%. Davy had about 18 favourite players that he used and wasn't giving young lads a chance. So, like, this is a different approach, Murph. Some of it is the hand kind of forced because of the injuries and the lads who are coming back in. But at the same time, if you were looking for any team coming out of the league right now, I would say the happiness barometer would be pretty high if you were a Wexford supporter.
Yeah, I think particularly today's performance is something that I think the Wexford supporters were crying out for, particularly after last year. And like Keith Ross's situation, like the way he has so many injuries and so on, like he's been handed that situation and he's just had to try and go and make the best of it. There is positives there, not to say there's positives of having injured players, but there's positives in terms of his hand was forced in terms of really having to go and trust so a lot of younger players. But in managing that situation and in terms of getting the most out of those players, he now has a really good situation on his hands where, like, you look how this game panned out. Wexford were down by, I think it was 5 points before they got the first score. I think it was 5-0 before I think Seamus Casey got a free and pops it over. And how they responded, and really between that, I think it was about the 40th and 60th minute, how they just kicked on when they got their goal. Okay, granted, a bit fortuitous, but got the goal. And it's like they smelled blood, and they started getting really good scores after that as well. They were really aggressive. They were driving forward, maybe spilling a few balls, but, you know, redeeming themselves, getting the ball back, moving again. Very aggressive. And I agree with you, Skell. It was actually a point I thought about during the game, you know, where Ross were on the line. You could see him, like, you know, he was really balanced. He was, you know, obviously getting involved in the game, not losing the head. He was very calm and cool. But obviously, when the game was in the melting pot, he was kind of, you know, reflecting onto the field, you know, his emotions of a bit of urgency, you know, see out this game. And they did see out the game as well, which is important, you know, because Waterford had their chances there to come back at them, to kind of weather that bit of a storm and, you know, saw out the game, finish it out by 3 points. So I think that performance today, like, that was a performance Wexford people were kind of starved of last year. And just, you know, when you consider where they were, not even this time a year ago, but like fast forward a few weeks, it was last round and playing Kilkenny down in Wexford Park and trying to avoid relegation and all these things. You know, I mean, it's light years apart. And I was really looking at this Wexford team today going, you know, if they do get those players back from injury and everything is going well for them, you know, they're not very far off getting to a Leinster final. You know, that's realistic. If they keep that momentum going and they don't, now there's potential in the next while is that, you know, they falter a small bit and the confidence might get knocked and are they able to pick themselves back up. It's not to say that they're going to have a clear run into a round robin and that this feel-good factor stays going. But they are at a nice place at the moment where they can be really positive about what they've done while still pointing to mistakes like the Offaly match where they just didn't start that game at all. You know, so I think Keith Ross would be very happy where they are going home tonight now. He'll be saying, right, we've got our results that we needed without being perfect, so the lads can't get ahead of themselves. You know, I can still point to them. And I can also point to, lads, we have players to come back. So if you think you're in this team now and that's it and you have your jersey, well, you know, say that to Liam O'McGovern, say that to Dio Keith, say that to Liam Ryan. Like, there's so many players there. So really, I think quietly and even without being spoken about, I think Keith Ross will be happy enough where Wexford are. And I think every Wexford supporter will be happy at this stage now that, like, if you told him this at the start of the league, this is where you'll be, I think they'll go, yeah, 100% happy with that.
He's in a great spot now in the sense that, like, he's created, like, indirect competition in his group.
Yeah, yeah. So, and he's earned it as well. He's earned it, you know.
If you've got a stagnant 15 or 16 players, let's say, the competition subsides, goes down. But now he's got the young guys who are chomping at the bit saying, you know, I can make the team here. So you were naming the list of people that are missing, Will, and I'm asking myself, who is guaranteed to get back in? And you're saying 50%? At a minimum, obviously, but there's lads there that have played over the last couple of weeks against Clare and against John Waterford, tough fixtures, and say, we're keeping the jersey. It's hard to see how the likes of King Burns will start. It's hard to see. Like, Damien Reck is, like, was savage into back again. Like, he's been one of the players of the league for me, actually, after looking at him today again. So I just think they're in a really good spot going forward, and Rosser has them in a nice spot now. Nice spot with a competitive group.
Okay, that's a lot of nice words about Wexford. Let's prepare for Waterford here, because A lot of Waterford fans are annoyed. A lot of other supporters have been making reasonable points as well. Paul Barry 1212 on Instagram. Why even Waterford needed a goal that they have no player inside the 40? Evie Young 41. What's gone wrong for Davey and Waterford? And loads of tweets earlier on which were just saying, you know, we need to talk about the Waterford situation. So Waterford struck 13 wides during the game, which obviously would be a big disappointment. Probably the only plus point to today was Jamie Barron coming back in, getting 4 points and getting game time into him. But the reality is there was Waterford scrambling to try and get a result, and the result ultimately they didn't get, and now they go down to Division 1B. How bad is it looking at the moment, Scal?
Look, it's not looking good. It's hard to find positive words for Waterford. You're looking at a couple of individual displays and saying that they were impressive. You know, for periods, Jamie Barron was excellent with the ball in hand. Michael Kelly was a good primary winner. Kind of lines from long distance shooting, but then you're saying there's not an awful lot less. And I think, to be honest, and I'm not trying to discredit anyone's performance, but I think they have to take Billy Nolan out of there now at this stage. They need to put in a set outfielder and have to take him out, because look at the way
Billy Nolan go back into the goals then.
No, no, okay. He doesn't. No, Sean Ryan keeps the goal. But like, even for the goal that was conceded today, excuse me, Billy Nolan rushes out like and he gets sidestepped, you know. And I think that's really what a goalie does when there's someone coming towards the goal, not in the outfield. So there's a few things wrong. And I was looking, thank God for the high behind camera behind the goals, because it gives such a reflection of the way the opposition, both teams set up. And like, I have noted here that Wexford set up on the Waterford puck out was really good. And again, if you can, like I always say, when the ball's in play, when they have the ball, you have the ball, they're puck out and our puck out. That's the four elements of the game. That's the size of it. And if you can dominate two, if not three of them, you're a long way on. And like, Wexford were really good on their own puck out and the Waterford puck out. So it's very hard to see how Waterford get a platform in the game. And like, I have a note here about Casey's second point in the second half. If you watch the high behind, like Waterford defence, they let people up. Like, they let the likes of, who was it, the traveller, your man, what was his name? I forget his name, but the Wexford cornerback travels up into the opposite 50-yard line before he gets contact. That's far too far. And like, I think game plans are nice, they're lovely, but ultimately, if you go back to North Cross game, right, you strip it back, you have a much better chance of competition than when you try invest in this kind of tactical formation as what Waterford are doing with the ball and without the ball. It's serving them no justice whatsoever. They're actually getting caught out when they have the ball and when they don't have the ball. So I think just Waterford just need to strip it back. Now, will that happen? I'd say that's an emphatic no. I don't think it's going to happen, because there's people that have too much pride for to strip it back. They're going to keep going the way they're going. And it's only to the detriment of the players. I know they've got lads to come back as well, but they're not playing in unison. They're not playing cohesively. They're playing nearly individually, because they don't know how to play to the system that's being provided in front of them. Do you know what I mean? So it's all very... it sounds bleak, but unfortunately, lads, it is bleak. Do you know what I mean? And it's the same situation.
Not to stop you here, but when you say people are stubborn, you mean Davey Fitzgerald, right?
I do, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I do, because publicly when he speaks, I always find this deflection. It's deflection off his own plans, deflection off the group he inherited. Or what he says it's because of the group he inherited, or deflection on off the performance that just happened towards the previous manager or whatever about them. But ultimately, like, what's been produced by Waterford over the last 24 months has been done by David Fitz and controlled by him. You know what I mean? And Waterford aren't playing well at all. They're not playing really well. Like, and even when you were saying that some Twitter user asked about people trying to get a goal, etc. But like Desi Hutchinson, again, when they were trying to, at the last minutes, out on the far 50, like, what is he doing out there? Just, I mean, sometimes when you're chasing a game, just get back to brass tacks, shove everyone inside in deep and try to play the ball indirect. When you've got players who can do it, like Fitzgerald, Park and Patrick and Desi. But they just didn't do that. But it's the puck out for me, Les. They're causing themselves an undue hassle with the way they're set up on puck outs. On their own as well, because they're leaving too much space, you know, to the opposition to have their puck out, and then too much space to the opposition coming into Waterford's half on their own puck out. So there's a lot happening, and I just think if Waterford are going to move forward, they need to just say, strip it back, go back to orthodox and have at it, because they have a great group of players. We know that. We've seen this before. But I don't think they're being structured correctly, and I think they're being guided incorrectly.
Okay. Murph, your take on where Waterford are at ahead of the last round?
Yeah, look, I couldn't disagree with Anthony Scahill saying there. Like, I was, the few things that I thought Waterford were actually doing well in the first half were like stuff that if you were playing 15-on-15, playing orthodox, you'd have a great platform to go and win the game. But because it was very much individual kind of pockets of really good hurling from Caelum Lyons, from a great fielding there from Shane Bennett, from Mike Kiley and different things. But because where they were taking the ball in these areas, they were miles away from scoring at these times. They were kind of isolated as well. I thought Caelum Lyons was really good, and I think he's been really good for the league, but it's been really down to his endeavour. It's down to him just, you know, bursting the gut, trying to get onto a ball and different things. But I do agree with Seattle there. Like, they're being stifled by their own game at the moment. Like, Jesse Hutchinson came on, I think it was for when it was Mike Kiley was going off, and he came on and he was in around the 14 or the 21 and he was looking dangerous. And I was like, brilliant, here we are now. Jesse Hutchinson is in and he's going for a few scores. And like that then, when they actually really needed, I suppose, when they're getting a bit of traction, it's like that system was trying to be implemented. He started having to drift, which I believe it's not a case that was him. He was having to drift further and further from goal as opposed to staying in there. Like the goal they got, a mistake from Wexford. Dizzy Hutchinson picks it up in the 21, actually fumbles it the first time, has two Wexford defenders there, but he still has the talent to just go around the lads and bury it. But there was no support anywhere near him because Watford had gone right back, you know, so he shouldn't be isolated even in that scenario. But I just thought it was strange that when he comes on, they start to get a bit of traction to an extent. We're playing a little bit orthodox, but then when there was a possibility to go win the game, they completely drift away from it. They go back into this system of being really far from goal. And like, there was a chance they could win the game. There still was a chance, but they just weren't putting the right foot forward to actually go and do it. And I believe that was down to the structure. You know, like I said, few individual pockets of skill and individual skill and brilliance from Watford players. But that individual skill wasn't matched with the system that actually could support them in terms of driving forward, in terms of getting scores. It would just look like that they were a little bit confused at times. And I think these are things we've been saying week on week that, you know, they have the players, there's lads there showing, but they're just stifled. They're a little bit confused. They don't know what they're doing at the moment.
And Murph, if you watch the first 10 minutes, right, when they went 5-0 up or 5-1, they actually started with an orthodox setup.
They did, yeah. I felt that, you know.
Like when Barron got a point to put Waterford 6-1 up, that came from an orthodox setup with a puck out that was won and then came through with a Barron run through the middle.
Yeah,
that was perfect. I was saying, just Waterford, they have fixed themselves right now.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well. Yeah, yeah.
One position change where Wexford in, one position change where they brought out one of their forwards and created an extra man midfield, turned the whole Waterford set up again, turned it on. And next thing, they went back to the old way. And here, you know, this revised setup that Waterford produced was actually a major part of the downfall. But when they were going orthodox, they were sound. They were 6-1 up.
Yeah.
One change then triggered an overreaction by Watford, and then it just actually goes south, and Wexford brought themselves back into it again.
Yeah.
So I wonder.
Right. So I don't want to be seen to rag on David Fitzgerald. So purely, I'm going to read some of the comments that we got in, and this is what we've received ahead of the pod. So Rebel Zabu here on Twitter: will Davey keep getting away with these tactics he set out with? Because even my dog knows they're not working. It's quite sad to see those lads having to play the way they are. In general, they are a good side. Also, similarly, JP McGrath asking the question: do Waterford fans now have to question the appointment of Davey Fitzgerald even more, as well as the people who actually appointed him? If he's still in power, does he get the third year over Waterford to justify his appointment? So I don't know what he'd have to achieve. I presume at this stage, lads, as much as Davey Fitzgerald has said this is a longer term project, if you take where they were and that they were in a league final not that long ago, and it wasn't that long ago that we were all talking about Waterford being a team who could potentially push Limerick, they're now going to be a Division 1B team in 2025. You would think that no matter how much you're talking about a long-term project, if Waterford have a bad championship this year, he's under serious pressure, Murph, isn't he?
Oh yeah, he is. I mean, I'd compare to Darry Egan last year. I mean, Darry Egan didn't plan on having a poor year, and I'm sure he had a longer term plan as well, a 3 or 4 year plan. But if the plan isn't working, you know, unfortunately, yeah, you have to step aside. And like, I do think, like previously we said, and this is not saying anything about, you know, lads I would have played with, but like we spoke about the likes of Eddie Brennan maybe being a good fit for Waterford at the time, in terms of like they have a group of players there at the moment that, you know, they're not going to be around forever, and they have potential of, if not winning something, but actually creating a platform for what might come true behind them, and keeping that, you know, that good generational form going with Waterford. But if you, out of politeness, I suppose, keep doing what you're doing, and hope, I suppose, that someone after two Like, I mean, last year wasn't great. This year doesn't look like it's going to be even as good as that. It looks like it's going to slip even further. Do you continue doing the same thing, or do you go and maybe have a look at a manager that might be a good fit? And that's the thing. It's not just a case you want to go out and pick up, you know, any old manager that's out there in the scene. You want to pick a manager that's a good fit. And I think at the time, you know, if you look at where these Watford lads are at the moment, they're looking like that they need a little bit of confidence, that they need someone to come in, bring things back to basics. That'd be quite refreshing. I've been in situations as a player where you've maybe been involved in a setup where it can be a little bit confusing, you know, where you don't really know what you're meant to be doing. You can have all the team meetings you want, and you can lay out all the plans, but when you get out in the field, you suddenly are a little bit confused. And that's what I feel that this Watford team have. They need to have a manager that really, I suppose, goes back to basics, instills it like, okay, we need to go orthodox here. I'm going to trust that you have the talent to go man on man, to go 15 and 15, and that maybe we're not going to win every day, but we're certainly going to get more results than we're getting at the moment. So if judging by the way they're going at the moment, it looks like that they'll go into a Munster Championship. And I hope this isn't the case, because I think a championship of Watford is automatically a better championship. But yeah, it looks like they'd potentially go out with a whimper here, you know.
They're rank outsiders right now. If we were making the
completely, yeah,
based on what we've seen, there's very little chance that Watford are going to be in the top three.
Like, I think Scale said a few weeks ago that they just get the wooden spoon. Like, I think that's where we're heading at the moment. And it's a pity. And I say that, you know, I'd say that with a heavy heart, because I look at a lot of those Watford players, you know, Jamie Barron, Desi Hutchinson, you know, Tadhg Burke and all these lads. And they're great players. You know, love watching them play. Caelum Lyons, you know, great player as well. Jack Fagan, all these lads. They're brilliant players. And I don't want to see them, I suppose, selling themselves short. I don't want to see themselves being part of a team that they don't get to flourish in. As a player, all you want to do is flourish. You want to achieve your potential. And if your potential isn't good enough, well, at least, you know, you can make your peace with that. But I don't think these players are achieving that at the moment. And that's something that I suppose I feel for them in that scenario. And I think, you know, if things keep going the way they're going, I think even Daly kind of has to admit, okay, well, maybe I'm just not the right match. You know, you don't have to hang your head in shame. Just go, okay, maybe I'm not the right match here. And the county board say, well, look, this isn't working. But, you know, I think if you're to do justice to players, find something that fits, get the show back on the road, and you still have a good few more years here where you have really talented players where you can, you know, look at Wexford there. You know, they're after getting things back on the road again in a very short period space of time. So I think, to bring you back to the start of your question, Will, you know, if it keeps going this way, you can't really go with a third year of it. You know, it'd be a bit mad.
I think more if Kim McGrath and 20s go well for Watford this year, you know, particularly in Munster, when they're, I suppose, when they're given that much of a chance, because Limerick and Cork are relatively strong. But if they have a competitive championship and do well, do you know, is he going to step up, you know, as a Watford man, a very, very proud Watford man? We saw how he reacted, you know, 2 years ago when they petered out the championship after Clare. So, like, if things pan out the way we think they're going to happen, you know, Hurling's a game that can change, the landscape can change very fast. But if Watford do potentially get the wooden spoon, I think there's internal pressure. I think the people of Watford won't stand for it. I don't think they will. I don't think one-off performances here and there would actually save them. You know, I mean, the management team, I think there's going to be pressure from internal to go and go back to a Watford person. So it says a lot could unfold there in the next 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, I think if Davey was on the call with us right now, he would point to the fact that he was appointed as a serial winner to come back in here for a second term. But that comes with its own issues as well. I think he could disagree with anything that you guys have said there now. But I think he knew himself that he was appointed at a stage in that Waterford team's development where he was coming in to try and give those extra few percentages and to try and turn what they had into silverware. And if that doesn't happen, I think Davey Fitz would be the first to admit that that's been a, you know, that lack of success will probably cost him his job by the end of it. So we'll see. Obviously, a lot of Waterford fans have been in contact, very, very annoyed with the way that they're hurling this year. And we heard even, I think it was Shane last week, was in contact with saying he was just dispirited about even watching the team at the moment. So they're going to be in 1B for next year. Offaly are also going to be in 1B. I was watching this game earlier on. Cork ran riot. Cork, if you poke the ball onto their half-back line, they will run it back and they will do a lot of damage. It was the main learning, I think, for Offaly today. 5:28, Cork scored in the end. A hat-trick of goals for Alan Connolly. Darragh Fitzgibbon also scored a goal when he came off the bench, and Brian Hayes scored a goal when he was introduced. Shane Kingston got the other one. Kingston and Dalton hit 11 points between them during the game. Declan Dalton hit the freeze reasonably well all day. It was a good day for Cork, and this was probably the game where we expected Offaly would get opened up on at some point. and it happened today in Tullamore. So they play against Clare next time. To preempt what Skell will be thinking, Johnny Kelly, the Offaly manager, said after the game, he's basically going to release the under-20s off to hurl with their own group for the next while, because they need to get ready now for the Leinster under-20 championship. So it's going to be extended members of the panel that are going to be used next week against Clare. But that's where they're at. Cork have left themselves in a position now where they play against Wexford, and if Cork win against Wexford, they'll be assured of a top three finish next week as well. So it's Wexford and Cork very much in pole position. Before we head towards the members pod, these are how the tables sit at the moment. So in Division 1A, Clare on top. They've got 7 points secured. They should beat Offaly in the last game. They're going to be going to the semi-finals. Kilkenny are just behind them currently, with Wexford, with both teams on 5 each. Cork are on 4. Waterford sitting on 2 after their defeat, and Offaly sitting on 1. And in 1B, and we'll talk about it, Skell's already hinted he reckons that Galway aren't going to beat Limerick this coming weekend. But Limerick out in front at the moment, 4 wins and 4, they sit on 8. Tipperary on scoring difference just ahead of Galway as things stand, with those teams on 6. Tipperary will have to overturn, it's a 30 point deficit in scoring difference at the moment, but they'll be looking to put Antrim to the sword. And then the teams who are in dead rubber positions, Dublin, Westmeath, both on 2 points. It's their last game, doesn't matter, because neither of them are going to qualify for 1A next year. And Antrim are preparing at the moment for the Leinster Championship next month. So that's how things stand in 1A and 1B. And just before I go, a quick mention of what's happening in 2A. We know the Carlow are now into the final because they've got head-to-head against Laois. 4 wins and 4 for them. They won this afternoon against Down, 320 to 218. Laois opened up somewhat away from home against Meath, putting that Carlow defeat behind them. Laois won 426 to 112. Willie Maher, their manager, was not in charge because he was away on business today, which is probably an unusual situation in the middle of the league. But Eamon Jackman and our old buddy Sean Flynn were in charge of Laois this afternoon. They are now up to 6 points, so they're going to have a home semi-final. And then after that, you've got Kildare and Down on 3 points. Kildare started the weekend at the bottom of the table, sit third now as things stand. Kerry on 2, it's been a very disappointing campaign for them. 3 defeats from 4. And Meath also sitting on 3 defeats from 4. So that's how things are in Division 2A. Remember that the top couple of teams in there will be going up to the new Division 1B for next season. Lads, it's been a pleasure for what's been the free pod so far. Nice bit of needle, bit like the games this week as well. And we will reassemble for the members pod.
Thanks, lads.
Ciao.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.